Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And welcome inside the Bill Ford Tubbs studio. It is the Boomer and Geo program, the final day of 2024, December 31st. The guys are out until Thursday. It is myself. It is Willie Colon. We've got CeeLo and Zoo and Fliegelman and you at 888-808-1019. A lot to get to today. We will wrap up and close out the year. We've got some things up our sleeve for that. We'll have some audio for you coming up later. So far, we've run through 14 moments of the year from the Boomer and Geo program. I've got my top five coming up later in the show. We've also got some moments from the year we will get to. And we've got football to get to. And who better to have to talk football than Willie Colon? What's up? You came back for more.
I know. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, man. You're always a gem.
I'm a gem. Yeah. Well, you know, I was at Rutgers last night. Got to watch Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey do their thing as they played a very good Columbia team. I tell you, for a 5 p.m. game on December 30th, the atmosphere was unbelievable.
It was rocking.
It was really, it was amazing. So it was really cool, which maybe a couple minutes on that later on. But I start, you know, in CBS Sports Network, really, they got the highlights. Look
are
at
the
that.
Kids back in the building?
So that's what's interesting. Usually, no. Usually, now they're on their break. The student section was packed last night, and it really was. It was a lot of fun. And this Ace Bailey is really something, and so is Harper. But, you know, I was taken back yesterday listening to a lot of the radio station, including us, starting in the morning, obviously, through the midday, and then, you know, Evan and Tiki a little bit. And then also, I know Evan was out, but it was Sean Morash, and, you know, Even the talking shows on TV, and I'm my head's going to explode with this giant thing. And the more I think about it, the more you realize how complex the situation is. And it is amazing to me that not only is the fact that the Giants won Sunday a story in New York, but that's a story nationwide.
Yeah,
on all the talking shows. And I'm left with this. What are they supposed to do? It's like, it's enough already with this conversation.
Yeah, I saw McAfee's rant. I saw a couple people's rants and really pissed off at the Giants for winning a game. You know, it's tough when you're asking guys to go out there. And, like, first of all, I've always said you can't pretend play football.
Right? No, you get killed.
You get hurt out there.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when my brother came to me in college. It was like, hey, man, it's just not in me no more. I think I want to step away.
Mm-hmm.
And my first reaction was like, nah, we can do this together. Like, obviously, you want to have that dream to play with your brother. But then as I walked back to my dorm, I said, that's probably the best thing for him. Because I remember, especially in my college years, how much it takes just to be on the field and be considered a guy that like the team can depend on. You can't be halfway with that. So the fact that those guys was willing to go out there Sunday, give it all they had, win, compete. Like I mentioned yesterday, his team haven't scored 40 points since 2019. Even Daboll, if you listen to his comments at the end of the game, I know he played it. He was like, this is what happens when a quarterback does his job.
Yeah, 100%.
We can put up points and we can look like an efficient offense. Like, those are all things, little nuggets you can hang on to. And, you know, guys don't care about draft status. I know it's hard for people to believe, but they really don't. So I credit the Giants for winning. And they still have an opportunity to get a quarterback.
100%.
It's not out the window. So I think yesterday was overblown.
And you were right. Yesterday was the day where they asked him a couple of times about the draft status and where they're going to pick and, you know, losing the opportunity at the number one pick with the win. And he answered it exactly the way you thought he would.
Yep.
But, you know, I think one of the smartest things that I heard yesterday, and I will credit the man himself, and I know he's a big Giant fan, but I do think it was one of the smartest things I heard, and that was from, I can't even believe I'm going to get, Sean Morash.
Morash.
Yeah, and it's something I actually didn't think of until I heard him say it, and I think it makes a lot of sense, quite frankly, and that is, if you were going to make a coaching change, and if you were going to, well, I'll leave it there with the coaching change for now. If you were going to make a coaching change, you would have done it, and you would not have let them coach this game to try to win. You would have done something with an interim head coach, and you would have asked people to not play Malik Nabers. I mean, Malik Nabers was banged up. There was a chance he wasn't going to play.
Right.
So you could have very well sat him, made sure he didn't play to have any impact on the game. And listen, if you win with your, I don't want to call them backups, but your next level guys, all right, there's nothing you can do about it. And so that, I thought his take was, he could be wrong, but I thought it made sense that these are my guys going forward, and we're going to play this out, and whatever happens, happens, and we'll deal with the draft when we get to the draft.
Right, and I also think that is a great point, because you look at the Jets, right? They knew they were getting a new head coach, and so they kind of jumped ship early. I think in reference to Brian Daboll, like I've said, knowing guys on that team, they like Brian Daboll. They play for Brian Daboll. Obviously, he hasn't had the success that they thought they should have had this year under him. But overall, he's a coach that a lot of people still look to for direction. I think that's important. And the fact that those guys are willing – because think about it. There's so many guys – If you look across the aisle in reference to the New York Jets, I mean, your star player, Sauce Gardner, is telling you that there's guys that's already tapped out,
mm-hmm.
right? That's not really coming out of the Giants locker room. What they're saying is, hey, we understand it's a tough season. There's been a lot of reasons for that, but we're ready to move on and move forward. I mean, they asked DJ Reed, our star corner, who I love, by the way, at the end of the game against the Buffalo Bills, pretty much like, hey, man, you know, you're about to go into – you know, what does it look like for your future with the New York Jets? He goes, I'm ready to hit free agency.
That's a rough comment.
That's a rough comment from a guy who is loved throughout the building, well-respected throughout the league. And he's like, listen, I'm done with this show. I don't care it's pretty much wherever I go, I'm ready to just entertain that. I just don't want to be in this building. That's not coming out of the Giants locker room.
Haven't heard it.
Mm-mm. So I think that speaks volumes in itself.
The one thing that I saw online that made me take a double take, and I put it on the sheet for you.
Okay.
I saw my guy at ML Football, who posts a lot of good football content. He replayed from Hard Knocks this summer, Joe Shane in his office, and he's got his two kids are on the couches. And I guess he asks the question, who should we draft? Who should we pick?
Right.
And his son goes, Jaden Daniels. And, you know, Shane just smiles, and all of a sudden his son goes, quote, you only get this job once. You need to do what you have to do to win.
Mm.
Like, that's a future GM right there. But it's really amazing how things played itself out, that they wound up, and again, the Saquon Barkley conversation is for another time. It is what it is. He's in Philly. He's doing great things. They wound up paying the quarterback. Didn't work out. You part ways with Barkley. Now, they've gotten good production out of Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary, although Singletary's fumble in Washington was a big one. But they've gotten production out of the running back position. Not Barkley, but still pretty good. They go that route, stick with the quarterback, and then the guy. And I know they did want him, and they were trying to make moves to move up and trade up, and I understand that. But it is amazing, and it's revisionist history, though. When you see that clip, it's like, damn. And then you see what Jaden Daniels has done this year.
Yeah, but system matters, right?
Oh, it does, for sure.
Positioning matters. Having a new head coach and Dan Quinn, a lot of that matters to the success of why Jaden Daniels is who he is right now, on top of him being elite quarterback.
Sure.
I don't know if I guess I'm trying to say nobody knew Dan was going to be that guy.
Of course not.
So I think it's easy to look at that clip and be like, oh man, we blew it.
Sure.
But if you ask a lot of people in the draft, everybody's like, well, we'll see. You know,
but you can say that with every quarterback and every kid that's drafted.
But that's how I feel about Shadur. That's how I feel about Cam. So I don't blame Joe for that. I do blame him for not trying to hold on to Saquon, but like you said, that's another question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different conversation because, you know, like, he was here. He's had really good seasons here. But if the team's not good, and, you know, you can go back to Brian Daboll's comments after the game, as you pointed out just a couple of minutes ago. He commented about the quarterback play five different times.
Yeah.
And I'll bring it back to, I've said this a couple of times. I don't know that I've said it to you. You know, I did the Buccaneers and 49ers for Compass Media Networks, and the Giants were playing that game in London that morning.
Okay.
So I was doing the game with Brian Baldinger, who everybody loves.
By the way, he's awesome.
Watching Baldinger on the field with the current players who the respect they have for him is unbelievable. I forget who it was. One guy came up to him. We were on the field before the game. And he's like, when you doing the breakdown of me? Like, they're really into it. It's pretty cool.
It was crazy. The breakdowns aren't elaborate, right? It's just him.
He was the first one to do it, though, I think.
Is that what it is?
I think he's the first one that started doing that.
It's just Baldy with a pen pointing at the screen, breaking down what he's seeing in front of him.
But it's pretty cool. And I go back to that.
I love Baldy. He's always, every time I've ever seen him, he's always been love and respect.
Great guy.
Yeah.
So I go back to that day. They had the Giants, Jaguars, I think it was, in London on the big screen. And he's told this to BT and Sal, too. Watching Daniel Jones, there were plays to be made. And he's sitting there, like, frustrated, like, throw the ball. And then you would see the replay, three guys open. And so you bring it back to, does it mean Jaden Daniels would have been the same here? I'm not saying he is. I don't know that he wouldn't have been. He might have been even better. I don't know. But when you have a quarterback that's got talent that is gun-shy for whatever reason, as Daniel Jones was, it changes the complexion of the offense. And so who knows? Maybe what we saw Sunday with decent quarterback play is what they are capable of doing. I don't know. It's one game. It's hard. You don't want to overestimate or overblow it. But, boy, what you saw Sunday was kind of what I think they thought they were going to do.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, in reference to gunshot, we watched Jalen Hurts go through that this year, right? Like, part of the reason that A.J. Brown kind of flipped his lid was because he felt like he was open. And if you go back and look at the tape, you know, prior to him having that kind of breakout game against the Steelers, there's footage of Jalen Hurts just not simply throwing the ball, right? And pretty much relying on the run game to kind of get him out the building with W's. However, that was the biggest problem with the Giants. They didn't have anything to offset the lack of production from Daniel Jones. If they had a significant run game, if they had little pieces where they can depend on, this team is a different outlook. Because I did, like I said yesterday, I did think their front seven was sneaky good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Didn't get a lot of credit overall. You know, I think Daboll is eventually going to get his guy. I don't know who that looks like, but I am interested to see once they get a quarterback that's efficient enough that can do the job. I think the Giants are going to be damn good. I think they're going to be competitive in that division.
And one thing that gets lost here, too, is everyone is, they're picking them. They might pick fourth. By the way, they might pick seventh or eighth, because I wouldn't be stunned if they beat an Eagles team this week. That, I mean, I have no idea. It's Tuesday morning. Is Tanner McKee starting this game? Mm. Is Kenny Pickett starting this game? Is Jalen Hurts going to get reps? So God knows what type of Eagles team is even going to come in to this game on Sunday. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Giants win Sunday as well. It's possible. So who knows where they pick? That having been said, just because they're picking fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, wherever it is, doesn't mean you don't have opportunities to still move up. I mean, you could trade and move up if you really want the guy.
Well, if they beat the Eagles, they're possibly they can move up, right? If they lose to the Eagles.
Oh, no, for sure. But I'm saying the possibility is they win Sunday and they end up falling even further back.
Gotcha, honestly.
But yes, they could, if they lose, depending upon what the other teams do, they could slide up to 3-2. I can't imagine they would all win. But you never know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee won on Sunday. They're playing Houston, I believe, and I don't know who Houston's playing. So, yes.
I tell you who's not going to win, the Browns.
I would agree. They look like they have checked.
They're so over their
season. I heard Tiki talking about how
it was bad.
Yes. I did not watch the game, but
I don't know if you ever pay attention to body language on ball players, but you could tell half of that team was like they were booking their sandals vacation.
They
were over.
Understood. See, that's an interesting team though, because you wonder if they kept that pick at number 3. And obviously this is a conversation we can get into later or tomorrow as well. If they kept their pick at 3, if that's where they remained. They restructured Deshaun Watson's contract. Is he the quarterback going for? Or do you draft? You say that, but
you go
he's still owed a boatload of money.
Yeah, but his shoulder's shot. It hasn't worked out.
So you do think they will draft a quarterback?
100%. I don't think they go anywhere else. Because I think they have enough on defense. They have some significant injuries they got to figure out for the future. However, I think at the quarterback position, they got to go find a guy. DTR simply isn't it. He's had multiple opportunities. Deshaun Watson. I mean, you talk about the shoulder this year.
Sure.
I mean, he looks like a shell of himself at this point. And I like Deshaun Watson coming out of Houston. I thought he was like, man, this kid's got a bright future. However, ever since he's been a part of the Browns, it just simply hasn't worked out.
No, it has not worked out at all. So anyway, so there's other opportunities for that. That's all I'm trying to say is that the Giants don't have to be where they're at. They always could find ways to move. Now, you have to give up something to get it, obviously, but it's not like that that possibility is completely shot. And it comes back to what you said, I think it was yesterday or maybe it was last week. It also depends on how much the Giants like these two players. I know the Giants have scouted Shedeur Sanders a lot. There are many articles written about that. We've seen video about it.
Kind of trolled them and wore the team color shoes.
On Saturday. I did see that too. Yeah. So you also wonder if he wants the Giants from the standpoint of the whole Malik Nabers thing, the podcast with him and his teammate, where his teammate was saying you would look good with Malik Nabers, and he certainly didn't shoot it down. Deion Sanders did not shoot down the idea of the Giants picking him when he was talking about he's going to be the number one pick, and you know who's got the number one pick.
He kind of had some words in the media yesterday, like, we don't know where he's going, da-da-da-da, this is not a package deal, because I think there was speculation of, you know, Shedeur and him being landing somewhere together.
So that was, if you go back earlier in the season, that was a big talking point. I feel like with the work he's done at Colorado and the fact that he has come out numerous times saying he's not going anywhere, I feel like that's kind of calmed down.
Okay.
Now, are there spots that are going to be available? Sure. That's something I want to get to later in the hour because Monday, there's going to be more openings, as we know. And the one team that has been linked to Deion has been the Raiders, assuming they move on from Antonio Pierce.
Oh, this is going to see your Cowboys.
Well, so that's been, it's funny you say that. So I have said forever, for the last couple of years, when and if they part ways with Mike McCarthy, I've always believed the next Cowboys coach was going to be either Bill Belichick or Deion Sanders. Mm. Belichick, I guess, didn't want to wait, obviously moved on to North Carolina. The Deion thing is still out there, except for the fact that Deion has pretty much, he really has been pretty steadfast in saying he's not going anywhere. So
I've seen Deion say a lot and do other things.
A lot of guys have done it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. I mean, even Belichick said when they asked him in North Carolina last week, like, you know, what do you say to the people that think you're not going to be here very long? And he said, they didn't take the job to leave, but he's also got an out in his contract in June. Like, there's the buyout goes from, I forget what
it's like
it was.
Like a year, right?
Well, it's not even a year. I think the buyout to get him out of the contract, I think
$1 million.
Correct. Yes. I think it falls from $10 million to $1 million on June 1st. So it was nice if you were a North Carolina fan to hear him say that, but then you see that and you're like, huh, that's interesting.
The way Belichick is setting it up, having his son kind of on the staff, being a defensive coordinator, and if he doesn't have success, or he does have success, I wouldn't be surprised if Bill was like, all right, I tried. It was great.
This college thing ain't for me.
I set everything up. Yeah. I'm ready to get back into the league. I wouldn't be surprised.
It would be interesting. So we'll get into the coaching stuff coming up in a little bit. More on the Jets, too, because there was a very interesting back and forth with Jeff Ulbrich yesterday, or at least an interesting question and answer. And I think it points to one of the biggest there's a lot that went on with the Jets this year, but to me, this is one of the biggest issues with this franchise this season. We will get to that later this hour as well. We will also have the top Boomer and Geo moment of the year, moment of the days from the year, and also some of the top sports stories from this season and this year as well as we wrap up 2024. Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, nice to have you with us, 623. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, Built for Tough Studio. 888-808-1019 is the number. We've got a lot to get to this morning on the final day of the year. And Chris Lopresti with a lot to get to right now. What's up, Chris? How are you?
Good morning. Doing just
fine. Good morning.
Is my mic on? There we go.
Yeah,
hi. Good
Atta
to
boy.
See you. Good to be heard from. Very, very good morning to you, gentlemen. We are brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet and roll with us. Well, the Lions and the 49ers did wrap up NFL Week 17 last night in Santa Clara. Essentially it's a strong word, meaningless game for Detroit. Not meaningless, but as far as the standings go, we know Week 18 for them in the regular season finale against the Vikings will determine where they're going to end up playoff-wise, but Dan Campbell did roll his starters out there, and it turned out to be a wild one.
Play clock down to one. Goff wants the snap. Hands it to Gibbs. Outside right. He's got the first down.
That's
and more.
Touchdown.
25-20. 15-10. 5. Woo! End zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Jahmyr Gibbs on third down and 2. Breaks it for 30. And the Lions have a 2-score lead on the board. It is 40-28.
That's Lions Radio.
Because obviously, you know, I was at Rutgers last night, so I didn't see much of this other than the highlights. But it's amazing to see how much blue you see in the crowd.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
San Francisco doesn't usually have many opposing colors in their
lost
building.
Lost season that's, for them. Good yes, year exactly. for the Lions. But, yeah, it's not exactly around the corner. So you get
no,
people.
That's a trip.
Making the trip out there
that game
around
was
the
fun
holidays.
To watch last night. I wish you would have saw it. It was fun.
It's back and good. Forth, up and down, a lot
well,
of points.
Well, I got to say this. You know how, like, some players be like, man, I want to play in this offense. Mm-hmm. So if you're an offensive lineman, you want to play in the Detroit Lions offense. Like, I mean, like, there were four linemen outside. I mean, they had some packages where it was Skipper, I think two backup linemen, and they were just, these guys were all over the place. It was fun. So I, for a chubby guy that never got the ball, it looked fun.
Well, Gibbs right there, as you heard in the clip, gives them the breathing room they needed to finish off San Francisco. It ended up a 40-34 final as Detroit joins Minnesota at 14-2. And as I mentioned, they will meet for the NFC North title and the one seed Sunday night at Ford Field. Jared Goff threw for 303 and three scores, including another Ben Johnson masterpiece executed perfectly. Short pass to Amon Ross St. Brown. He laterals to Jamison Williams, who took it the rest of the way to the house. So in typical Dan Campbell fashion, there was no let up, full speed ahead, and that was, I guess, reflective in his voice after the game.
Look, there's nothing easy about this, you know, and
took him a little while. He did gather himself, though, and rally to give an answer on making the choice about how much and how long and how many of his players to go with.
We flew out here, we prepared this way, we came out to win, and that's ultimately what it came to. And yeah, you do. You cross your fingers, nobody gets hurt. I mean, it's tough.
And lastly, a reminder for everyone, this is what we're all about.
Look, there was never going to be anything, you know, we knew what this is. You're out on the West Coast, you go, hey, man, it's all good. That's what we do. You know what I mean? This is what we do. Like, we love it hard.
Okay. I mean, some do. I mean, it's the only way I
do. They do.
Good for them.
They love it hard.
I love that they play. You know,
they are the most battle-tested team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
By far.
Hard to argue.
Yeah.
And you know, there's this loser mentality now of not playing guys because we're afraid to get hurt. You know what? Go out and play the game.
They Chiefs. Did. Even though it. They've been, I mean, ravaged by injuries, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
I get it.
But,
I get it.
Yeah,
they
are.
They get paid to play a game. Go play the game.
But that, to your point, that's also, like, when you're a GM, depth matters this time of
for
year.
For sure.
Quality depth matters. Like, everybody's banged up. But if you got guys, like, for instance, my backup center was Doug Legursky. He was like a 6-foot center out of Marshall. Played in the Super Bowl when we played Green Bay. Graded the highest, right? Like, never played up until that Super Bowl game and balled out. So you got quality depth and guys who are invested. You can go on the road to San Fran and be like, give me your best shot.
On the other side, lost season for the 49ers continues. They're 6-10. Brock Purdy, 27 of 35. He threw for 377 and three scores.
Serious question.
Also,
more shocking if I would have told you or asked you in August that the Niners are 6-10 after 16 weeks or the Bengals losing week one at home to the Patriots. Because both of them are equally eye-opening.
I would say,
Niners,
yeah, really. Because, I mean, look, 1 week, one game, things happen. Sure. I know it's the season opener. But, yeah, San Francisco off
yeah, no,
the Super Bowl appearance.
Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the run they had last year.
Yeah. So Purdy had some numbers, also a couple of interceptions, and then they bothersome elbow, which knocked him out of the game late.
On that sack, I got hit on the backside, and, basically just my arm was on fire kind of thing.
Well, that's not what you want. But just to be clear for the guys like, you know, Gio and Al Dukes, who at times in the past maybe have questioned his desire. Mm-hmm. He wanted to, you know, set the record straight on that as far as last night was concerned.
I tried throwing a couple on the sideline, and I couldn't at that point. So, yeah, has nothing to do with tapping out of a game or anything like that.
Reminiscent of the NFC title game from a couple of years ago when they thought he was faking an injury, which, of course, turned out to be a torn UCL.
I don't think they really thought that.
Well, they...
Did they really think that?
Well, no, they had some fun with it, but they really went in on it for maybe a day or two.
Okay.
But and then, once we found out that he was going to have his elbow surgically repaired.
They were having fun at his expense.
They were, okay. yes. And he will undergo some further testing. The initial indication is that the UCL is fine. They're thinking maybe it's a nerve issue. But considering they're 6-10, you may not see him in the regular season finale, considering what he's dealing with.
What is his contract? Where is he? This is what, year three for him?
He has another year, but he's eligible for the extension talks will begin because he's in the window now where it can get done.
Man,
so I think his cap hit for this year was like $1 million.
Yeah, well, and that's why you win.
Yeah.
Now, not this year, but that's why they were in the Super Bowl last year. Because a quarterback's not making $50 million if he doesn't deserve it.
A few from the locals in the Monday morning after Week 17. Brian Daboll and the Giants in the aftermath of scoring 45 points, winning their first home game, and, of course, knocking themselves from atop the draft order. Hey, not what I'm focused on, not what the team is focused on.
Yeah, again, we can control what we can control. So, you know, again, we come in, we do everything we can to prepare for the week and go out there to play you know, as good as we can play, coach as good as we can play, and that's where our focus is.
Same will go for Week 18 on the road against the Eagles, who may or may not have Saquon Barkley out there going for the all-time rushing record. No shock here, but Daboll wasn't all that interested in revisiting Barkley's free agency and his ultimate defection to Philly.
I got respect for Saquon. You know, he's a heck of a player, heck of a person, and he's had a really good year this year.
But you don't want to revisit that decision.
Yeah, we're just getting ready to play the Eagles here this week, so... And he's part of the Eagles, and he's been a very productive player.
I know it's a Zoom, that sounded fake.
The follow-up from the reporter? Yeah,
did
you don't
want to
revisit that decision? Yeah. Oh, man. Then you got Jeff Olbrook swimming upstream in the final days of this mess of a Jets season and, of course, being asked to do more than he bargained for, taking over for Robert Saleh. Mm. So he's asked here to respond to Sauce Gardner's post-game suggestion from Sunday that maybe some guys have checked out at this point.
I took a real hard look at the tape in all three phases, and I was looking for that, you know, and in moments like this, it's a great opportunity to really evaluate the character of a man. And the truth is, I couldn't find it.
Now, maybe he didn't find it on the tape, but I'm finding it hard to take pretty much anything he says.
Agreed.
Seriously.
And 40 to nothing is 40 to nothing, and it shouldn't be.
Especially when you get this from him on Hassan Reddick.
This is what I want to get into.
Who has now played in 9 games for the Jets. He has 11 total tackles, 8 solo, half a sack.
Mm-hmm.
After all the drama that came with his months-long holdout. Here's what Olbrich had to say about Reddick.
I feel just so honored to have coached him and been around him. This guy is willing to do whatever it takes. He's one of the most unselfish players I've been around. And you just never know what you're going to get when you get guys of his caliber, you know, and sometimes they can be selfish in some ways. And there's none of that to this man.
So I guess the lack of stats
doesn't matter.
That shows the unselfishness. He's letting other guys
pass. Oh, yeah, because they've just been dominant since he's been here.
That's tough to take.
I agree.
It really is.
I agree. That's the comment I wanted to talk to you about after the break.
All right, well, you guys can get into it more. I got a corny, low-hanging fruit one for you.
Okay.
I forget who had it on Twitter X on this New Year's Eve. If you want to go to New York City to see a ball drop, instead just go to MetLife Stadium on Sunday and watch Alan Lazard play football. I like that one.
He does drop many passes. That is very true. You're, like, proud of yourself from that.
Okay. This is telling me. NYJ. And what was it?
I believe NYJ Matt on.
Okay, we'll make sure we give the proper credit to those who put that out there.
How many did he have Sunday? He had like 4 drop passes.
I've lost track at this point.
You could make the case, and their season's been miserable. He's had the biggest drops, though, all season long in the biggest spots.
And
that's Aaron Rodgers' guy.
And he missed time on IR, and he still probably leads them in drops.
Oh, no, for sure.
Dreadful.
Yep.
All right, let's head down to D.C. Let's make it positive. Let's turn it around here.
Yeah.
Right, back end of 2 in a row for the Knicks against the lowly Wizards, and this time they did not need OT. In fact, they turned it into a dunk show for Karl Anthony Towns in the fourth quarter.
Knicks fans have fallen in love with his team. Oh, Towns, a massive stuff. Yeah, that gets the Knicks fans up and gets Brian Keefe up to call a timeout.
Mike Breen on MSG.
I'm not much of a better, and when I do bet, I usually lose. But I would have bet the house on the Knicks last night. The Wizards had their shot over the weekend to beat
them.
They didn't. Mm-hmm. The Knicks woke up and said, all right, we'll take these guys seriously and handle them exactly the way I thought they would last night.
Yeah, especially in the second half. They outscore Washington by 11 in the fourth and by 18 after the break. They win going away 126-106. Cat finished with 32 and 13 rebounds. Josh Hart with his third triple-double of the season, 23 points, 15 boards, 10 assists. And he says they felt the love for the Knicks fans who made the trip down 95. To our nation's capital.
Oh, man, it's great. You see the love, man. This is, well, home game, what's this? Play 82 games. This home game, 42 and 43.
Yeah, that's hard on MSG right after the game.
I wonder what the tickets, because, I mean, I go into the Garden. The ticket prices on the set, when they're good like they are now, is ridiculous. Might have been, we joke about it, but much cheaper to go to Washington for that game.
Sure, by far.
Well, I only say
anywhere around the country other than New York.
Agreed, but I only say it from the standpoint of the Wizard fans jack up the prices knowing the Knicks fans would be coming down and try and make some money. I'm just curious. Because on a nightly basis, you probably go to a Wizards game for $10.
I'm sure there was a
Groupon.
Jacked it up to compared to other games, but I still can't imagine they were... I wish I could go back and look at last night.
Jump on a train. You there?
For sure.
And even driving is
4 hours.
It's easy.
They play the Bulls tomorrow night, $15.
Right.
Sunday against the Pelicans, $7. Yeah. Like,
that makes you cringe, too, right? Like, you can't ever support your own team in your own home. You got to go out.
They're 5-25.
Yeah, they're awful.
I mean, in fairness, they're 5-25.
Yeah, that's true.
They've been bad for a long time.
Yeah, I agree.
You
still want to take your kids to see a game and not feel like you got to put your house up. That's my point.
I agree, and you can do that because they're 5-25. What's up? Speak.
I know. Well, you guys were talking. So
that's okay.
Well,
you guys are allowed to talk.
You're telling me about Knicks Raptors at the Garden. Who cares? But we're talking about them on the road.
Well, I'm saying it's only 87 to get in at the Garden.
Only
for that
87.
Game, so it's not necessarily crazy.
That's probably for like a single seat, you know, standing room only somewhere up on the Chase Bridge.
That's the get in the door price, right? 87 bucks.
Yeah.
Well, Chase Bridge is the best place to sit.
After fees, that comes out to about $120.
Is it for basketball? I think it's great for hockey. Is it good on the bridge?
It's still good for basketball. Hockey's better.
Yeah, well. Gotta love hockey in person. Not the way the Rangers are going right now. We'll get to them in a second.
Yep.
8-game winning streak for the Knicks. 6 of them have come away from home. They've been playing a lot of road games, so they're home against Utah tomorrow night, but then right back on the road. They got Oklahoma City Friday night and then Chicago on Saturday. Meantime, the Cavaliers won again, 113-95 over the Warriors out in San Francisco. Cleveland, an NBA best, 28-4 now.
So just real quick. This is hilarious. So the Knicks and Jazz, all right?
Tomorrow night?
New
Year's Day night.
New Year's Day night. If you want to take your family, Willie.
Yes.
Right, you got two kids? Your wife, two kids?
Correct.
All right. The get-in-the-door price for the four of yous.
Oh,
against
okay.
the Utah Jazz, four you're going to sit together. In the nosebleeds.
Oh, boy.
Okay? You tell me how much you think that's going to cost the Cologne family.
Per ticket or total?
Total.
All right.
Nosebleeds?
This is the Utah Jazz. This is not the Celtics.
I'm going to say, what, $600?
For four tickets?
Yeah.
You're not close.
Really?
Not
I was
going to
say 500.
$285 per ticket.
Stop.
$285 per ticket.
After fees. They're posted at $211.
So what the hell are you talking about?
After he's talking about a different game.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm talking about the Jazz tomorrow night. $285 per ticket times four. About $1,100, a little more than $1,100 for just to get. Now, it's secondary market, it's I understand, disgusting. But that's because they're really good.
And for my kid to complain about the chicken fingers, take 8 bathroom breaks. Me and fight with the. Like,
and look, by the way, this is where the seat is. Upper deck behind the basket.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Brutal.
But that's when you're really good in New York. That's what it is.
Supply and demand. 101.
Drive to Washington.
Yeah. And save a boatload of money. God, I don't think it's even close.
100%.
College hoops. I'm sure you can get a nice economical ticket over there in Rutgers.
No, you can't.
No, really?
It's very expensive.
What's very expensive? Like what to get the get-in price yesterday?
I saw the secondary market yesterday, the get-in-the-door price.
Secondary had no tickets available. Sold out
the whole season. Their whole season sold.
Yeah, they tickets sold out. For Purdue on the 9th are going for $102.
And those are nosebleeds.
All right, but at least that's a conference game.
Yeah, so last night, the cheapest ticket, I believe, and this was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was a 5 o'clock
ticket. Was $82 before fees.
Good for them. Yeah. Nice, comfortable early evening home win for your Scarlet Knights.
Harper looking. No look pass to Bailey. One dribble. Fake. Up. In. And there's the triple-double for Dylan Harper.
And he's pointing at himself. He knows it.
First for Rutgers since 1983. And Rutgers is up 75-58. And how fitting, it's Harper to Bailey.
That's a wild stat. First triple-double since 83.
They're doing things that this program hasn't seen in a long, long time.
Well,
that was really good.
Jerry here on the fan. Rutgers over Columbia, 91-64. Dylan Harper, the triple-double, as mentioned, 16 points, 12 assists, 11 rebounds, while Ace Bailey led all scorers with 24. So they're 8-5, 7-0 at home, though.
Yep.
So that's advantage has played as they get ready to resume conference play Thursday night at Indiana. Say hi to Mike Woodson for us, will you?
Oh, yeah.
We miss him around these
parts.
You
know, when we were in Minneapolis for the Big Ten tournament last year? Yeah, last year, right? Because that's when you and Al got into your fight. went out to dinner the night before the games, and Mike Woodson was there with the entire staff. Was like two tables away from us, holding court.
Nice.
So that would have been the opportunity.
Did you go over and crash their dinner party?
No, I was at my own dinner party.
Okay.
I love Mike Woodson.
So did we.
He might be the only man who has a deeper voice than you.
I remember one time I was having dinner. If anybody ever kind of hit the city streets, you know, Catch, the restaurant in the city right there. I saw him walking with like four of the smokingest hot girls I've ever seen. Swear to God, I was sitting at a table. I forgot who I was with, but he walked in with like two other, I guess they were part of his staff, but he had a full, like, smoking.
Hey, good for him.
And I was like, all right, mate. I'll just get some too. Okay.
Yes.
Good I for him. So. Yes. Yeah. College football playoff quarterfinals get underway tonight. Penn State, Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl from Glendale, Arizona. Aside from that, you got Alabama against Michigan. Want to take a stab at the name of this bowl game that two big-time college football programs are playing in today?
Beef O'Brady.
Alabama, Michigan, Tampa, 12 noon kick. You have no shot.
The Starkist Bowl.
The ReliaQuest Bowl.
The what?
I have no idea. Okay. I have no idea. And I, you know, waited for the very end to play this.
I'm surprised by Jerry's disdain for college football.
I don't know. It's not disdain. I'm not interested in it.
Yeah.
Not disdain. I'm just not interested. I don't have the time to watch college football with the NBA and with the NFL and with it's just, it's too much.
That game will kick today before I even get home.
Yeah. That's true.
All right. I'm in denial. They played a better game last night. But still had nothing to show for it.
Here's Boquist, the insane save made by Shesterkin. Another shot. Same rebound score. Jesper Boquist and his brother Adam combining for the goal.
The go-ahead goal.
I'm starting this right now. I want Sam Rosen back for one more year. He can't go out on a bad season like this.
I mean.
No. Now, I'm not saying they got to win the Stanley Cup, but this can't be. Sam Rosen's not going out with this team playing like this.
Somebody that I follow is a big Rangers guy. I was like, at this point, let's get Laviolette out of here and put Sam on the bench.
Now, that would be funny.
Different.
We see a lot of crazy things in hockey that we've never seen.
I mean, again, 2-0 hole almost immediate last night. Yeah. Immediately. They come back and tie it, not once, but twice. They've got all the momentum in the third period, a couple power plays. They're in the Florida zone, bunch of good chances, one rush the other way. Bad defensive play by Keandre Miller. It's in the back of the net. Barkov with the empty netter, and they lose 5-3.
Have they announced, is Kenny Albert taking over on a full-time on TV?
I don't
TV?
Think they've made any sort of
because then I'm wondering if Don gets to be the full-time radio guy.
I haven't heard any. I could be wrong, but if so, I missed it. I don't think they've made any definitive decision.
Right, well, I'd bring him back. Let's go. Maybe Sam Rosen will. Back Maybe. In 25-26.
15 of 19 they've lost.
That's brutal.
Not a single game has gone to overtime. So they haven't even gotten the loser's point out of any of those games.
I didn't even realize that.
Brutal.
It's even worse than I thought. All right, Chris, we'll see you next hour. Thank you very much. Other side, more on the Jets with what he kind of touched on with Jeff Ulbrich and Hassan Reddick and also the whole coaching thing, because a couple of interesting notes yesterday came out in that regard as well. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
647. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo. Built Ford Tough Studio. 888-808-1019 is the number. So Chris played that clip from Jeff Ulbrich. So there's been a lot that has gone on this year with the Jets. We talked about it at nauseam. It has been a colossal fail from top to bottom. And if you want to know, at least in my opinion, you could point to Rob Saleh being fired as to why things went completely sideways, but I would take you back to that time when he was fired after they came back from London. People were ticked off and wanted him fired, right. So that is kind of what it is. To me, the biggest issue, one of the biggest issues this year in terms of the owner, really, it's his team, so I can't say overstepping his bounds, but the owner not allowing the GM to do his job, which is why the GM is probably relieved that he got the hell out of here and was fired, was the Hassan Reddick situation.
Right.
None of us know exactly what happened, but it certainly seems like when the Jets made the trade for Hassan Reddick, there were assurances that he was going to come in and play, and if things went well, we will talk about a deal. And he even said it at the podium when he was introduced, I'm here to play football, and never did. And Joe Douglas, at least outside looking in, looked to me like he was holding firm on that line. We had a deal. You are not abiding by the deal. Sit home. And then the owner decides, we're not good enough. We need Hassan Reddick. And Reddick's been a ghost. He has done nothing this season. Nothing. So if you want to draw a line in the sand, maybe, if you want to, to me, it's one of the biggest issues of this season with Woody Johnson. You could go Aaron Rodgers, Rob. So to me, it's the way he handled Hassan Reddick as opposed to the way Joe Douglas was handling it.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because I think if you look at it from this standpoint, once Jermaine Johnson went down, if Hassan Reddick was already in the building, now you have two bookends because Will McDonald started to come along, and now you have to you would have to think Hassan Reddick would play a lot better. He only has a half a sack.
Yeah.
Right? But there's some things that, having watched him, he has done really well, being able to set the edge. He's physical at the point of attack. He does a great job of mixing it up, and especially in and the stunt games, we're getting guys open and to their pass rush lines. However, there it's frustrating because one thing we saw from Hassan Reddick once when he was at Eagle was his ability to get after the quarterback, mm-hmm. right? He averaged 10 sacks a season, and he played over 67% of his snaps. So he was a guy you can trust on third down and flat out go get it, and he was reliable. That hasn't happened. And what's crazy, you know, he hasn't been a media darling. He's not an open book.
No.
He doesn't want to talk about anything other than the Jets. He doesn't want to talk about why he set out, what worked for him, his reasoning for all of it. He doesn't go into the weeds. So he, and, you know, I'm going to be honest. He may be, you know, Sauce had mentioned one of those guys that have checked out. He may be one of those guys he's talking about, but just hasn't said his name. So I don't know. It's interesting because I think Hassan Reddick, the Hassan Reddick for the Eagles, I thought was, I was like, man, we got a guy. Like, I liked him. You know, a local guy from Temple, balled out. But him coming to the Jets just hasn't worked out. And I think Ulbrich is just trying to be a good guy and save face because he knows he's going to be gone.
No, and he's been doing that nonstop, which we understand, I suppose. It's the Jets and my stance at the time when he was holding out and the Jets weren't bringing him in. My point was always, the Jets don't owe him anything. He's never taken or played a snap for them. And to me, if you don't want to play, don't play. Sit home and get fined every day and give up the money that you should be making. That's on you.
And the deal was weird, right? Because to my understanding, the Jets received a third round, right?
Like, I'd have to go back and look at the details.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the whole situation stunk. It didn't, for whatever reason, whoever got the guy that they traded for and the guy that did the press conference when he arrived here, something changed.
Because I think his team failed him.
His agent,
to be honest,
his agency,
they didn't tell him the whole story. And I think Joe from, and you got to give Joe Douglas a lot of credit because I actually saw him in the offseason. And we didn't talk about Hassan Reddick. However, a lot of the stories coming out of our building, he was very adamant that we're not going to have a deal. We're not going to talk money. We're not going to talk anything until your feet are in cleats and you're in this building. And it just didn't happen. And then what made it weird, Hassan was seen, like, over in Japan or something. Like, he was taking trips. Like, while this team was trying to figure, like, save its season, it seemed like he had his attention elsewhere. And then there was questions, well, if you do get him back, how well of shape is he going to be? And then he put out a video clip of him, you know, stepping over hurdles and doing drills. And I'm like, that does nothing for me. Like, if you don't have
not football.
Yeah, if you don't have another grown man pushing against you, that's not football to me.
And so, then the owner swoops in and tries to save the day and blew it.
Yeah, and it didn't work.
No, and then you got a guy in the building, and Joe Douglas, who was trying to do it his way. It's what you pay him to do. You know, it's a good thing they fired him, because he wasn't allowed to do his job this year, essentially.
Well, once they fire Rex Hogan, I think Joe D knew it was over for him. Fair. And then, you know, I don't know how true the story is about Woody blocking the Jerry Jeudy situation, if that was a thing. I don't know, you know, if Woody, there's speculation that he benched Tony Adams. I don't know. Tony Adams was struggling prior to that, so it's interesting. I would like to know the story if he really was interested in benching Aaron Rodgers while he was hurting mm-hmm. this season, because Aaron Rodgers in the beginning of the season to where he's at right now is two different quarterbacks, right? Just from a mobility standpoint, mm-hmm. looks way more confident.
He was a statue early in the season.
Correct.
Now he's moving around a lot better.
So I think there's still a lot underneath the hood that we got to find out, especially in regards to the season, but. Listen, I think Ulbrich, when we kind of talked about this behind the curtain, this was bigger than him. It was just too much on his desk for him to handle.
All right, so in line of the coaching thought, so we were sitting here yesterday and we saw the report that I guess Rex told somebody that he expects to interview. Didn't really surprise us. I mean, Rex has been lobbying to get an interview and get that job back. I do actually expect Rex to meet with the Jets at some point.
At least to have a conversation.
For sure. The Ron Rivera one then comes out. And so it's funny because I asked you yesterday, do you hire the GM, let the GM pick the coach, or do you hire the coach and have him have input on the GM so he gets the players he wants? And you said it could be done either way. It looks like the Jets are going to go coach first, which is, I guess it's not completely abnormal, but it's not the way things are usually done.
Yeah, it's weird for Ron Rivera to possibly be in the conversation because I think he was 4-13 his last year with the Commanders, and they gave him personnel control. Right. So which is, I don't know if that's his strong suit. I'm always a fan of getting a GM first, finding the structure, find the plan, and then go get a head coach that the GM loves and feels like he can like tap into and have that type of alignment. So I don't know. I really don't understand the reasoning. I just know how I would have done it. And I would go get a guy who I feel like has a plan and has a vision for the team.
At this point, with these two names being thrown into the mix, obviously, yesterday. And again, I think that was Rex more so than anybody saying that he's going to interview, though we do expect that. How fast do you think they're clearly are working on it now, you would think, obviously. How fast do you think the Jets move on this?
So
the season's over Sunday. There are going to be more openings. We know about the ones that are out there already. There will be more openings.
Bears, Raiders, Jets.
Of course. We expect the Raiders to move on. Yep. We know about the Saints with Rizzi as the interim head coach. There are openings. There will be a few more, you would think. There's usually anywhere from 5 to 8, I would say, every year. We know for certain of a few of them. Do you think, because there's a couple of big names out there, Mike Vrabel being one, obviously, do you think the Jets are ready to move, like, next week? Or do you think this is something that drags on?
I think
on?
They have to be. You got to start preparing for the draft. You got to kind of comb through this roster, see what you have, what you don't have. You got to get a guy in here who, and I thought you said something yesterday that was important, a guy that the fan base is going to be excited about.
Yeah.
I think you forget that aspect of it. Like, the locker room has to love, the building has to, obviously, but the fan base in itself has watched multiple coaches walk in this building and get set on fire and walk out. You know what I mean? So there has to be a coach that can win over this fan base that all right, we finally got a guy. We know who he is. We know what he's about. Like, Ron Rivera is, I think, in his 70s?
He might be.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, I don't know how.
Now, Ron Rivera is not, no offense to Ron Rivera, he's not exciting anybody. He's
that's
just
my
not.
Point.
I mean,
right. And I'm not trying to.
No.
Be rough on Ron Rivera.
No, he had a rough time of it in Washington. He took the team to the Super Bowl in Carolina, so he's got a little bit of a resume for sure. But at this stage, he's not exciting anybody in the Jet fan base. The names are what the names are. And I do think Vrabel, first and foremost, would be the name that I think would get the fan base most excited. I think Gruden would, and I do believe Brian Flores is a name too. And I think Rex, not all Jet fans, but I think there's a big contingent of Jet fans that would be excited to see Rex come back one more time.
Well, yeah, I mean, his first 2 seasons as a Jets head coach, he took him to the AFC Championships, right? And that's the thing, if you look at both teams, if you look at the Jets in its entirety, like, there was a moment in time where we had a really good offensive line, a quarterback, a damn good defense, and Rex was the face of all of that. So if you're a Jets fan and you grew up during that time, you're like, I just want a glimpse of that. I want when we were able to walk into any building to feel like we were the bullies on the block instead of being, you know, chow for other teams.
Yeah,
I think that's what Jets fans want more than anything. And Rex was, you know, he was brass, he was in your face, and he got it done.
And all of that won't change. The one thing I do hear, though, from friends of mine that are Jet fans is, boy, it's a long time since he's coached. And that,
yeah,
I think,
ball is ball. I think he's still very much tapped in. I think a lot of guys, one thing Rex, and having, you know, being able to have him played with him in the forum, excuse me, Rex knows how to adapt. He knows how to tap. He's not some old guy on the shelf like, here. He's not that type of guy. So
he could be the guy. You never know.
I like him.
We'll find out.
But I do say this, and I've said this before. I wouldn't let Rex pick his personnel. I think you got to put a proper team around him so Rex can just solely be Rex.
Well, and that's why maybe the fit is good, because they do have talent on this team, which we've discussed. All right, when we come back, a couple minutes on the Knicks, we go back to the football, I promise. A lot of football, as always.